Michigan closes out non-conference play with a 45-20 win over SMU. A week to forget for the Big Ten. The Cornhuskers, they invade Ann Arbor this weekend, and a whole lot more to talk about. It's all coming up next on this week's edition of Hail to the Pod. Welcome to Hail to the Pod, where we talk all things Michigan football, the Big Ten, and college football. I'm your host, Kevin Rich. As always, you can interact with the show. Tweet me at krich23 on Twitter or email me your questions and comments at hailtothepod@gmail.com. So the Wolverines, fresh off a 45-20 win over SMU this past Saturday, they wrap up non-conference play at 2-1, 19th in the AP poll, 21st in the coaches poll, with conference play looming large this weekend. Big Ten on its way, 0-2 Nebraska, who would have thought that going into this game on Saturday. They'll come to the Big House with a noon kickoff on what should feel like a nice fall Saturday in Ann Arbor. We will preview that game in a little bit. You know, it's funny sometimes, a 25-point win, you go out and you do that against a team like Michigan State or Penn State, Wisconsin, Ohio State, you know, some of those teams we talked about that are the teams you go up against in your conference year in and year out, and anytime you beat them, no matter what the score is, it feels good. And, you know, you beat a team like that by 25, you're high-fiving, you're running down the streets of Ann Arbor, celebrating, you know, what a great win that is. And you forget about the things that happened in the game that didn't go well. You forget about the pass interference calls and some of the lackluster performance on one side of the ball. And you think, okay, you know, the coaches are going to fix all that. Who cares? Our offense piled up all the points, and we got the job done, and we won in a big way. But then when you do that against a team like SMU, when you're favored to win by 5 touchdowns, you start to be maybe a little more pessimistic. And that's where we're at this point in the season is, are we pessimistic? Are we optimistic? Are we glass half full? Are we glass half empty? What is the thought going into conference play on what this team is going to be the rest of the way? And I can understand the sense of pessimism about the game on Saturday, but I'm here to tell you that I'm more of the optimistic variety here. I think a lot of the things that happened in that game on Saturday, there's good reasoning and explanation for, whether it's, you know, early growing pains in the season, whether it's, you know, the change in a quarterback coming in a game that you didn't prep for, or most notably, Michigan's running game. So you look at that and you say, okay, Michigan had a really tough time running the ball, particularly in the first half against SMU, before they decided they were going to focus on the passing game and got it done through the air. But I think a lot of that is really due to the fact that Caron Higdon didn't play. We've seen through the first two games of the season this year that Michigan's bell cow, the guy they want running the ball, the first man out there, is Caron Higdon. And him not being able to go on Saturday and putting Chris Evans in a situation where you're asking Chris Evans to go north and south and pound the ball into the hole and try and break through a tackle or two and make some plays, that's not the kind of running back that Chris Evans is. Chris Evans is, well, you think about the NFL and you talk about, you know, you got your first down, second down back, and then you got your third down or your, you know, losing in a game and you need to bring in a running back that can be a little more shifty and move the ball up the field. You know, Chris Evans is that. Chris Evans is your guy. You want to get him going east to west. You want to get him in a situation where he can try and beat a defender one-on-one. That's his skill set. Where Caron Higdon is that more traditional ground and pound guy. He's the guy you want to line up in an I formation. He's the guy you want to get out there with two tight end sets and give him the ball and let him try and find that little lane that hopefully the offensive line can open for you, break a tackle or two, and be gone. So tell me if I'm wrong. None of us really knew that Caron Higdon wasn't going to play the game. You know, it wasn't until the game actually started where Chris Evans started taking the first couple snaps, and then you come to find out that Higdon was working through something, as Coach Harbaugh said in the press conference this week, and they thought he was going to be able to go, and he was in warmups and he couldn't. So, you know, when we talk about, oh, like the running game, it was terrible against Notre Dame, and then it was great against Western Michigan, but it regressed again against SMU. You know, I'm going to take that with a grain of salt because I really think this Michigan running game is a lot better than we saw against SMU this past week. I don't know if they're as good as we saw against Western Michigan because Western Michigan's defense is terrible. But I think Michigan's going to be somewhere in between that. And if they can balance that out with a really solid passing attack, which is something we'll talk about in a minute, Michigan's offense could actually be somewhat decent. And we know the offensive line is a work in progress, but when we talk about the optimism on the team, Shea Patterson can flat out ball. That guy put up a great game on Saturday. I mean, how good was it? Shea finished the day 14 of 18 for 237 yards. The guy threw three touchdown passes and had a passer rating of 232.3. Now look, you need a physics degree to figure out how QB rating is determined in college football. I don't think I'll ever understand that. And I'm no Merlin. Don't go get me a hat and get me a wand. But I'm going to tell you this. When Michigan's quarterbacks last year were consistently under 100 on quarterback rating, when your quarterback goes out and does 2.5 to almost 3 times that, that's a pretty darn good performance. And Shea Patterson put that up on Saturday. And what I like about what's going on here is the fact that as the O-line is looking to gel and get better and they're trying to work through it and figure out how that unit can be more cohesive, Shea Patterson has been able to make plays with his feet. So we're in a situation, you're watching the game on Saturday, if the pass rush isn't coming, he's able to drop back, make a play. When he gets time in the pocket, he'll find anyone open down the field. But when the pass rush is coming, he was able to make plays on his feet. He was able to shake away, get out of the pocket and either scramble for a first down, throw it away if he had nobody open, which is a great, you know, something you always wish your quarterbacks will do. It's better to throw it away than try and throw or force something in there and get an interception or a turnover. And most importantly, there were several times where he shook out of the pocket and he actually made a really good play down the field. And whether it was Zach Gentry, who had a great game at tight end, or Donovan Peoples-Jones, 4 catches, 3 of which were for touchdowns. Those guys stepped up in a big way, and Patterson certainly looks like he can be the real deal for this Michigan offense as they get into conference play here. So call me the optimist, but I am definitely more of the optimistic half glass full side as it relates to the Michigan offense here after we've now seen them through 3 games in this young season. Defensively, yeah. I mean, there were some things that were left to be desired in that game on Saturday. Certainly, Michigan's defense didn't play to their typical dominance that they usually do. I think we're so spoiled now that we're used to Michigan not giving up 20 points like they did on Saturday. I think the real big thing here was, again, and we saw this in the Notre Dame game, the defense at times has given up a player or two. Or they, more importantly, they've given up a penalty, right? Like a big pass interference call that kept the other team's drive alive. And you get in a situation where you're getting a third down and long, and they're going to be throwing the ball down the field, and you're blitzing the quarterback, and he's probably going to put up an erratic throw. Your secondary needs to know when to not be a little too touchy and need to figure out a better way to try and deflect or bring that ball down and not cause the penalty. So that was definitely frustrating on Saturday, seeing the amount of penalty calls, particularly the pass interference calls that Michigan had go against them in that game. But here's the good news on that. That is all coachable. The more reps you get in practice, the more in-game experience that you get, and having a coach like Don Brown working with that defense, I think we'll see the defense get a lot better with that. And you also got to give some credit to SMU here, particularly in the second half. You know, I thought bringing in that mobile quarterback, Will Brown, was a good change of pace for him. You know, the freshman play caller, that was pretty strong out of him. And it puts you in a difficult situation if you're the Michigan defense because you're preparing for the other quarterback, pocket passer. This guy comes in and he's got the run pass option. And he came into that game and now you got to make a decision when you're a linebacker or a Viper like Devin Bush, am I going to spy on the quarterback or am I going to try and drop back and help in coverage? And there were countless times in that second half where Brown looked like he might go and run with the ball and that quick little hesitation was able to draw Michigan's defense going towards him thinking he was going to rush the ball and then he was able to find Prochet, who was an awesome wide receiver. Going to keep an eye on him the rest of the year and see what he does for SMU. But he was able to get open quite often on slants, which at that point are really hard to guard as a secondary. So, yeah, I think you know, defensively, there are a lot of corrections Michigan's got to make after this game. But what's nice about it is they came out, the offense performed, particularly the passing game. You win the game 45-20. You've now had more in-game experience where you've now played against two mobile quarterbacks when you factor in playing against Notre Dame and Wimbush in game one. And we know Michigan has struggled against a more mobile dual-threat quarterback in the years past. So the more simulations you're able to have playing against that kind of quarterback before you play some later down the road, case in point, when they play Ohio State, that's going to be something that they're going to get better at. So I think this game left some adjustments that certainly need to be made by Dom Brown and the defense, but I think we've come to find out with this defense over the last few years that we can definitely put more faith in the defense fixing some things from game to game a little bit more than the offense. So what did we learn three games into the season for the Wolverines? I think the bottom line is this. I think the offense is certainly a bit better because they've got Shea Patterson and his ability to make up for what's, at this point, a mediocre offensive line. The fact that he can get out and he can make plays on his feet will certainly help as they figure out how to blend and mesh this offensive line a bit better. I'm not going to freak out about the running game. I think that was more of Caron Higdon being out, although I will question if Chris Evans isn't that ground and pound kind of running back, why they settled for that so often in the beginning of the game. You know, some interesting play calling there. But I think as we get into conference play here, you know, the team has shown why they're 2-1. You know, they've got a solid defense, but they've had a couple times here where they've made some mental mistakes with the penalties and the targeting calls and some things along those lines where they're a little too aggressive, and that's hurt them at times. And offensively, they've been a little disjointed. But for the most part, it looks like a team that's going to be better than what we saw last year, and it looks like a team that, with more reps in practice and more in-game situations, they're going to continue to get better. All right, it's time to go around the Big Ten. What a terrible day for the conference. Buzz, your girlfriend, woof. I mean, seven teams losing to unranked non-conference opponents. What a dumpster fire for the Big Ten. You know, I told you on Twitter before the games on Saturday that I really felt Maryland and Nebraska needed to be careful, and they weren't. And some of their other teams that they call friends and foes in the conference didn't really do much better. I mean, Maryland losing to Temple didn't shock me. I did like Temple as an underdog from a betting perspective. I felt Maryland was a bit overrated going into that game. But you don't expect them to lose in that spot. And that's just a terrible look for the Big Ten with Maryland losing to Temple. Nebraska, I mean, talk about a terrible look as well. That was a massive shock. You know, I told you they had to be careful because they were playing against Troy, and we knew their quarterback Martinez wasn't going to play. You know, figured they were going to try and keep him out and rehab him a bit and get him ready to go against Michigan this week, which he's still questionable for. But you still expect Nebraska to get the job done against Troy. I mean, come on, you don't lose to Troy. The Huskers 0-2 for the first time since 1957. Not a good start for the Frost era for Husker Nation. And that's a team that's going to be coming in really hungry in Ann Arbor on Saturday. Now, the team that Nebraska didn't get to play opening weekend was Akron. And talk about another bad look for the Big Ten. They rally from an 18-point deficit to beat Northwestern. I mean, come on. Pat Fitzgerald, you're killing me, man. I really thought Northwestern would be a team that would give Wisconsin a bit of a run in the West. And what do? They go out and beat Purdue first game of the year. That seems like a really good win at the time. We come to find out Purdue's just flat out terrible this year so far. And then they lose to Duke, and now you lose to Akron? Akron hadn't beaten a Big Ten team ever. Zippity-doo-dah. The Zips. Unbelievable. Akron beating Northwestern. And I mentioned Purdue. That was like, if there was not a must-win game for that team so far in this young season, it was that one against Missouri. And it was a great game. I mean, an offensive slugfest, but Missouri kicks that field goal as time expires and wins the game. Who would have thought Purdue would be 0-3? What a disappointment with all that hype going into Jeff Brohm's second year. Just crazy stuff. Two teams you don't ever really expect to win a lot in the Big Ten are Illinois and Rutgers. South Florida beats Illinois. Not much of an upset there. Illinois is just a brutal football team. But Rutgers, again, I don't expect Rutgers to go out and win every game. But when you get curb stomped by Kansas of all teams, I mean, this isn't the Kansas Jayhawks basketball team. This is the football team. They're terrible. And Kansas beats Rutgers 55-14. That is not a good look for the Big Ten either. And the one that hurt the Big Ten the most on the national landscape was by far Wisconsin losing to BYU. And that was a really fun game to watch. Don't get me wrong. The Cougars win that game 24-21. I thought they dialed up a great game plan against Wisconsin. They mixed in those trick plays. They ran a lot of motion out of the backfield, jet sweeps, did a lot of interesting things there to try and get Wisconsin off guard. But even defensively, like, BYU just looked good. Like, they didn't care how big the offensive line was for Wisconsin. They shut down the running game, and they really dialed up a great game plan to beat the Badgers. And, you know, for the Badger fans to go out there and say, oh, it's a field goal kicker's fault and, you know, revoke his scholarship and all that, like, chill out, guys. Like, stop crucifying the kicker. You should not be in that situation. You should not be relying on a field goal kicker to send you to overtime against BYU at home. You're a team that hasn't lost a non-conference home game since 2003. You're a team that's won 41 games in a row as your non-conference winning streak, which was the biggest in the nation. You should not be mad at your field goal kicker like he was the one that put you in that situation. No, it was the fact that you couldn't run the ball. You didn't have any sort of advantage with your offensive line on their defensive line, which is crazy to think because you've got probably the best offensive line in the country. And your defense looked terrible. And credit to BYU, they got the job done. But again, not a good look for the Big Ten with Wisconsin going down to BYU. Now here's the good out of the day. Penn State, Indiana, Minnesota, Iowa, Michigan, they all win games. They take care of lowly competition. They take care of business. That's what we expected some of these other aforementioned teams to do as well. And then the big one of the day certainly had to have been Ohio State taking care of business on TCU. And that's a big win for Ohio State. That's a good win for the conference. But of course, it led all the experts and all the prognosticators out there yet again to gush over Ohio State and how they're the best chance to make the playoff. Which I need to hit on for a moment because that drives me nuts. All these guys out there saying that the Ohio State is the only chance the Big Ten makes to the playoff I think is ludicrous. First off, we see year in and year out that one-loss teams can make it to the college football playoff, especially if they win their conference. And not only that, but one-loss teams have gone on and won the national championship in the four-team college football playoff era. So don't sit there and tell me, all these experts and prognosticators, that teams like Michigan, Michigan State, and Wisconsin are out of it. Now, don't get me wrong. A loss against BYU for Wisconsin at home, not a good look. A loss for Michigan State at Arizona State, probably not a good look because we don't really think Arizona State's going to have a great year, but they are undefeated right now. And that was a game that, of course, when you get a bunch of people in a room and they talk about a team's resume and they talk about games and what happened, that's one they could probably say, well, they had to go to the desert. It was a 10:45 game at night. It was 1:45 or 2:45 in the morning when the game ended. That was a tough trip for Michigan State. I can look past that if they were to go on and win the Big Ten and win the conference championship. And then Michigan probably has the best one loss out of all of them against Notre Dame, which is a prestigious program, a game that they played on the road, first game of the year, when a lot of things can happen. So for the experts out there to say that Ohio State is the Big Ten's only chance of making the playoff is crazy. We haven't even mentioned Penn State. Does Penn State have a one in the loss column? No, they're undefeated. Penn State had a pretty darn good year last year. Penn State could have made the college football playoff. So for all those folks out there to say that Ohio State is the only chance the Big Ten has of making the playoff, I would pump the brakes. Now, I'm not saying Ohio State's not playing the best football right now in the Big Ten, because they are. And I'm not saying Ohio State doesn't have a chance to make the playoffs, because they do. I'm just saying that for when the people out there say that Ohio State is the Big Ten's only, bolded, underline that word, when they are the Big Ten's only chance of making the playoff, I mean, take a break. It's September, folks. We're 3 weeks into the season. Things happen. Players get hurt. A ball bounces a certain way. Teams that we didn't think were going to be that good become a lot better. Teams that we thought that would be good aren't as good. A lot of things can happen, and I am super pumped for conference play to really kick off. And there are some intriguing games this weekend. Wisconsin goes to Iowa. What kind of performance are we going to see out of Wisconsin after losing to BYU this past Saturday? I look forward to seeing how they respond. Boston College goes to Purdue. I mean, Purdue could be starting at 0-4. And then Michigan State, fresh off their bye week, they go to Indiana. Very curious to see how Sparty looks after a week to digest what happened in the desert. And then, of course, the game that Michigan fans are certainly looking forward to, the Battle of the Blue Bloods, Michigan taking on Nebraska at the Big House on Saturday, which we'll preview here in just a little bit. All right, let's go around college football and hand out some 3, 4, and 5 stars this week. 3 stars, going to go with the Syracuse Orange, the Cuse in the house. They beat up on that train wreck known as Florida State, 30-7 in the Carrier Dome, which, funny story about the Carrier Dome, the building named for an air conditioning company actually has no air conditioning. Go figure. That was a sweltering one at the Carrier Dome from some of the folks I talked to that went to that game. But that's a big win for Syracuse. They seem to get a big one each year. They got the one against Clemson last year. That was Clemson's blemish before getting to the playoff. They knocked off Virginia Tech the year before. Love what Coach Dino Babers is doing for the Cuse. It'd be great to see them get back into the national picture. Don't know that they're going to really run the table here. They're 3-0. They've got a tough conference that they play in. They got a quarterback who plays great ball, who is injury prone. But this is a team that I think could definitely make it to a bowl game this year, and it's great to see them having a great start to their year. 4 stars, got to give this one to Eddie Orgeron and the LSU Tigers. They had me fooled. I thought Auburn would win that game by 10-plus points. LSU plays a great second half to get back in the game, and the field goal as time expired by Cole Tracy gives them the 22-21 win. That is a big win. I mean, they have a big win against Miami, LSU does. Then they have a big win against Auburn. This team is now 3-0. They got confidence growing. This is a team that could surprise some people in the SEC West. Now, don't get me wrong. They still have 2 big games coming up down the road here with Georgia and with Alabama, but they get both of those at home. And this is a team that I didn't think would be as good. This was a team that I didn't think would beat Miami. This is a team that I didn't think would beat Auburn. A lot of people felt that way. And they're now 3-0, and they are looking forward to their conference slate. And for 5 stars, I got to give this one to an actual 5-star, Dax Hill, the newest 5-star recruit added by Michigan. This guy is the consensus number one safety in the country. One of the few 5-stars remaining in the 2019 class that hadn't selected a school. This guy was recruited by Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Alabama. All the recruiting sites thought he was going to land at Alabama. Dax Hill picks the Wolverines. That is a huge get for Michigan's recruiting class next year. Michigan was looking like a top 15 class for next year. Most recruiting services have jumped Michigan up into the top 10, and some, including one I looked at, has them as the 6th best class in the country after landing Hill on Tuesday. That is a huge win for the Wolverines.
Here we go. Red 29.
There it is, there it is, there it is, there it is, there it is. All right, let's go to the mailbag. Remember, you can always email me, hailtothepod@gmail.com. I'll answer your questions here on the show. You can also tweet me at krich23. Leave your questions and comments there. Melissa in New York City wants to know what I thought of Coach Harbaugh's get-up this week. Thanks for the email, Melissa. We always love critiquing what these guys are wearing on and off the field. We know the khakis for the coach are a given every week. There's no doubt about that. No surprises there. But Coach, what are you doing wearing a long sleeve crew sweatshirt tucked in nonetheless when it's 85 degrees out there? It was sweltering in Ann Arbor on Saturday, and it's got to be hotter on the sidelines, and he's wearing a tucked in sweatshirt. I mean, Coach, come on. I went on the MDN site. This is how much I wanted to react to your question, Melissa. That thing is 100% polyester. We're not talking breathable fabric here. This isn't any cotton. This isn't any stretch nylon or anything like that. We're talking polyester. Talking practice? We're talking polyester. Coach, you are crazy. But we love you. All right, David in Southfield, Michigan writes, Kevin, did you catch Tom Rinaldi's interview with Urban Meyer? What did you think about it? Also, thoughts on his press conference on Monday? Seems like he's sticking to the same script, don't you think? David, thanks for the email. One guy I'm getting sick of talking about and thinking about is certainly Urban Meyer. I did see the Rinaldi interview, and I thought Rinaldi did a great job. And I thought there were some awkward moments in there for Urban Meyer. And, you know, do yourself a favor and watch the full 30-minute interview if you can stomach it. Because what they showed on game day and what they showed during Monday Night Football the other night wasn't the full interview. And the full 30-minute interview was really something to see. But what drives me nuts about this situation is Urban Meyer continues to make it about himself. Not once has he issued an apology to Courtney Smith, and not once has he really done anything to make anyone here feel any better about what he let happen in his program. Domestic violence is a huge deal. It's been sweeping our country. And every time Urban Meyer opens his mouth, he makes it worse. I'm sitting here watching the press conference on Monday, and I'm looking at the screen, and I'm like, dude, just shut up. Like, stop talking. You have a really good football team. You're lucky you have a job. You only had a 3-game suspension. All you have to do is pay $500,000 is what you ended up getting fined, which is pocket change for you. Talk about your football team and go out and play football. But he keeps going back to this and he keeps talking about himself. And when they're asking him a question about his cell phone and these deleted texts, and he makes up this story, at least it's what it seemed like he was doing, about how an IT guy took his phone because he needed more data and more storage space on his phone, so anything that was a year old or older got deleted. I mean, give me a break. And again, you think about the fact that his wife knew what was going on between the Smiths. Like, do you really think deep down that his wife didn't tell him what was going on? You don't think that those two shared in conversation about it? It's just so hard to sit there and want to believe Urban Meyer and believe that he's telling the truth when it seems like he's straight up lying. A lot of us have been in relationships or marriages, whether they've lasted or they haven't. But one thing that happens in all those situations is you share that information with your partner. And it's really hard to believe, given everything that we've heard so far, that Urban and Shelly Meyer did not talk about this stuff. But again, going back to the original point, I watch him in these press conferences. I watch the Rinaldi interview. It's like, dude, just shut up. I'm serious. Like, just stop. Be fortunate and lucky you're in the situation you are now that you get to coach your football team on Saturday, because you really should have been fired. That will do it for the mailbag this week. Thank you for the questions. Again, you can email those to hailtothepod@gmail.com and tweet them to me at krich23. All right, it's time for some best bets for the week. 2-2 last week, not too bad. Hit my lock of the week for the third straight week in a row. I mean, that one seemed easy, right? Vanderbilt, a 14.5 road underdog to Notre Dame. I thought that was an easy one to pick. They certainly proved me right on that one and proved a lot of people right there. Really tough game on Notre Dame, and actually one that Vanderbilt almost won straight up. So I'll pick four more games this week. We'll start in the Big Ten. Maryland, a 3-point home favorite against Minnesota. You're kidding me, right? I mean, have you watched Maryland play? Minnesota's actually not too bad. PJ Fleck's been getting things going. I think Minnesota can win this one straight up. I'm going to row the boat. I'll take the 3-point underdog status here. Give me Minnesota against Maryland. Clemson, they're a 16.5-point favorite on the road against Georgia Tech. Now, I know Georgia Tech likes to run that triple option, but Clemson is loaded on that D-line, and that linebacking core is pretty tremendous, too. I expect Clemson will control the game. They're going to make Georgia Tech pay when they're down, and Georgia Tech's going to have to throw the ball. And when Georgia Tech's in a situation where they got to throw when they're down points, it's not a good situation to be in. Clemson wins this by more than 16.5 points. I think they can win this by 20 or more. I will take Clemson. All right, here's a sneaky one here with an underdog that I like. Mississippi State, they're a 10-point favorite on the road at Kentucky. I like the underdogs here. Well, we'll call them the Undercats. Yes, the Kentucky Wildcats could go to 4-0 if they win this game. Now, I don't know that they're going to pull the upset, but I think this is a close game. This is one of those that Lee Corso says, closer than the experts think. I agree there. I think Kentucky is much better than a 10-point underdog at home. If you're gutsy, take them to win, but I'll gladly take Kentucky plus 10 against Mississippi State, who you know is going to be looking ahead to that game against Florida next week. And my lock of the week, I'm going to take a big gamble on this one, but I really feel positive about this. I'm going to take Sparty on the road at Indiana. Sparty, a 4.5-point favorite on the road. That's a night game in Bloomington. They get a week off to fix things, and I really truly do think Michigan State is a little bit overrated this year. But when do you see Michigan State come out of two really bad performances and put up a third one when they've got Mark D'Antonio as their coach? Adding to that, the fact that they had a bye week, I think these guys are in good shape going in this game. I think they're upset about what happened at Arizona State. I think they're upset about their performance against Utah State. They had a week now to think about it. I would not be surprised if they win by 10 or more. I'll take Sparty as my lock of the week. And now for the game in Ann Arbor on Saturday, the Michigan Wolverines take on the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Battle of the Blue Bloods. I love it when these two teams play each other. I love when historically great football teams match up on the gridiron. Could you imagine if these two teams got to play each other in 1997? How much fun would that have been to watch? And Nebraska, you know, they come into this game, they're hurting a bit. They're 0-2 on the year. They didn't get that opening game against Akron. Although after Akron beat Northwestern this past Saturday, maybe that was a good thing for the Cornhuskers. But Nebraska's coming in, they're ailing a little bit, and they're looking for a big win here against Michigan. And it's certainly a team that has played well against Michigan in the past. They have won their last two against Michigan. And actually, Nebraska is the only team in the Big Ten that Michigan does not have a winning record against. Michigan actually 4-4-1 against Nebraska. So this is an interesting game on Saturday too from that perspective, because if Michigan were to beat Nebraska, they will take a 5-4-1 advantage in the series, and that would mean that Michigan has a winning record against every team in the Big Ten Conference historically, which is pretty cool. Things to look for in this game on Saturday: the big question mark for Nebraska on offense is going to be the status of their true freshman quarterback, Adrian Martinez. He got hurt in their first game against Colorado. They kept him out last week. He, as of right now, Wednesday night, recording this podcast, is questionable for the game on Saturday. If Martinez is under center, that could be good for Nebraska. That presents more challenges for the Michigan defense. He is a mobile quarterback. He likes that run-pass option. Nebraska is able to bring multiple running backs in the game, and when you've got your quarterback that can run and you got running backs that can come in and run the ball, it presents its challenges. So I expect if Martinez plays in this game on Saturday, it could be a little bit of a more of a wrinkle and a little bit more of a defensive battle for the Wolverines going up against him. Now, obviously, if Martinez can't go, that leaves the sophomore Andrew Bunch in the game, who had a terrible game last week against Troy. I would expect if he's in, Michigan will be able to load up the box and blitz a lot, put him under a lot of pressure, force him to throw the ball, and it could turn into an ugly game offensively for Nebraska. So a big key for this offense for Nebraska will be whether Martinez is healthy enough to go. In terms of defense for Nebraska, this one's a little interesting as well, because if you look at Nebraska on paper, they do not look like a good defense. Statistically, they are 90th in points given up per game, which is not good, particularly because they've only played two games so far this year, and one of them was against Troy. And actually, both games were at home, where you expect your team to be a lot better than on the road. But if you watch tape, and I had the opportunity to go back and watch the game against Troy. I'd seen the Colorado game after the Michigan-Western Michigan game. Nebraska has a really good rush defense. And Michigan's got to be careful with these guys on Saturday, because they have 10 sacks in two games. That's impressive. And we know the O-line is going through some growing pains right now. That is the matchup to watch in this game. Does Michigan's O-line block those pass rushing defenders for Nebraska? Do they give the running game the ability to move the ball? And do they give Shea Patterson enough time to step back in the pocket and make throws? And if they don't, can Shea Patterson scramble away, make plays on his feet, and fire the ball down the field? I think Nebraska has an underrated pass rush. I'm really interested to see how Michigan's offensive line stacks up against them in this game on Saturday. In the end, this is obviously a game that Michigan could win and should win. Definitely a step up in competition from who they played here in the non-conference slate the last 2 weeks. Whether Martinez plays or not, I still think Michigan defensively is going to get the job done. I think the difference of Martinez playing and not playing will be whether it's a one possession game in the third quarter or it's looking more towards a blowout going into the fourth quarter. Either way, I think Michigan will get it done. I just think they're too good defensively. And I think Shea Patterson, even if the pass rush is coming after him quite a bit, I still think he can make enough plays getting outside of the pocket that Michigan can get the job done effectively against Nebraska. I'll give it to the Wolverines 34-17 on Saturday, a noon kick at the Big House on Saturday in Ann Arbor. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Hail to the Pod. Thank you so much for joining me. You can always email me at hailtothepod@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at krich23 and subscribe to the podcast on all your favorite podcast platforms. If you're listening on an Apple iPhone, you can download it in the Apple iTunes Store. If you've got an Android device, you can get it off Google Play. If you subscribe to the podcast, anytime there's a new podcast, it will download directly to your listening device. Enjoy the games this weekend, and as always, go Blue.